Hello everyone, welcome to this week's edition of the Spanish Shuttle Podcast with me, Phil Kitramelides, and Sid Lowe. Hello, Sydney.
Good morning, Phil.
A slight role reversal today. I'm the one who is huddled in the corner of a train station recording, and you are the one at home. Usually it's very much the other way around, but I am in Barcelona heading to Valencia, and you are in Madrid looking forward to what is going to be a very busy week of European football for Spanish sides. Before we talk about that, or we might not even talk about that, what we are going to talk about is La Liga and the results from match day 30, which are as follows. On Saturday, Getafe beat Mallorca 1-0 in an absolutely horrible game, which was won by a brilliant goal by Borja Mayoral. For the first time since match day 13, Levante aren't bottom of the table. They beat Villarreal 2-0, both goals coming from El Comandante Morales. Then there was a really entertaining and a little bit controversial game at the Estadio Balaidos. Real Madrid were awarded three penalties. They scored two of them and beat Celta Vigo by 2-1. Atletico Madrid beating Alaves by 4-1, 6 consecutive wins now for Diego Simeone's side. Then on Sunday, Athletic Club beat Elche 2-1, Betis thrashed Osasuna 4-1, a couple of really sensational goals, particularly William Carvalho's finish, which was absolutely glorious. Go and find it if you haven't already seen it. Rayo somehow contrived to blow a 2-goal lead. They got Santi Comesaña sent off and they ended up drawing 2-2 at Granada. Valencia 0, Cadiz 0, the less said about that the better, although Cadiz are vastly improved under Sergio González. And the big game of the weekend saw Barcelona beat Sevilla 1-0 at the Camp Nou in what was a fantastic game of football. For our patrons, we'll have a Q&A pod out tomorrow answering all your questions, a bonus pod on Friday talking Atletico Madrid, Real Madrid and Villarreal in the Champions League, Barca in the Europa League as well. Plus, we're going to have a new episode of TSFP Presents at the Games, which is out this week, discussing visiting and watching football in another part of Spain. Sydney, to the talking points and to Barca against Sevilla, you sent us a message last night on our WhatsApp group saying Barca are genuinely pretty good now. They're up to second place in the table for the first time this season. What was it in particular that made you come to this startling conclusion?
And then, you know what, it is a startling conclusion when you think about what we saw earlier in the season, when even in their good moments, there were big, big flaws to them. There are still some flaws this side. I think that's entirely natural. But there's an identity really that's really quite clear now. There's an intensity about the way that they play. They move the ball quicker. They understand each other better. They open the pitch really, really well. They still lose possession, actually, probably a bit more than a Xavi team or than Xavi would like his team to do. But everything happens much, much more quickly and with much more of a sense of intent about them than before. That's one of the things. Obviously, look, it's easy to come to that conclusion when you see what they've done in recent weeks. This is 6 wins in a row. It's 14 games now without a defeat. Of course, they put 4 past Atletico Madrid. They put 4 past Real Madrid at the Bernabeu 2 weeks ago, and this is only one. But I think the reason why I say it this time was I thought this was against a good side, a properly good side. Sevilla's flaws are largely at the other end, that they don't take their chances. I think Sevilla use the ball very well, and I think Sevilla at times last night played well, at times, not all the way through the game, but at times played well. But I think that's what really struck me, was that Barcelona pushed a Sevilla team this good right back into their area a lot of the time. A long, long way back. They were winning the ball a little bit higher up the pitch. As I say, they were moving it really well. They were creating good chances. And there's a feeling of momentum about this Barcelona team. And you look at them and think, yeah, this is a properly good side. Now, all the way through the season, we've been talking about how if you take the starting 11, this should be a better team. There are good players there. But there wasn't a structure. I think there wasn't a culture, for want of a better word, in terms of the daily routine, the work that went towards the way that they play, an underpinning idea, decision-making being right. And all of those things are starting to happen. And I don't want to individualise it, but it's really difficult not to look at this and think, wow, you know what? Xavi's a proper coach. And this is a proper team now.
We are going to individualise it a little bit and talk about two specific players. The man who was officially man of the match, Pedri, and the man who probably was actually man of the match, Ousmane Dembélé. Pedri scored the only goal of the game. Sensational, brilliant goal from outside the area. Do you get the feeling that that's what he's trying to add to his game, that Xavi has asked him to be this kind of player who's a bit more decisive, who's scoring these kind of goals from the edge of the area?
Well, certainly it's what Xavi himself says. He says, you know, we're trying to encourage him to shoot. We're trying to encourage him to take these options on. He said something quite interesting, I thought, Xavi, about Pedri, which I think is also applicable to Andres Iniesta, who, of course, is the player that Pedri has been most likened to, not least by Xavi himself. And after the game, Xavi yesterday said, look, what happens to Pedri used to happen to me a little bit, because his mind is focused on that pass, on finding the space to give it to someone else for that final shot. And sometimes that means he doesn't see the shot, because the mind is kind of set up, is hardwired, if you like to use a cliche, it's hardwired to see that final pass. And so we've been encouraging him to take that shot on sometimes, in particular when defences get kind of so much deeper. It's one way of bringing them out. It's one way of maybe having the chance to shoot around the edge of the area, because they're that little bit deeper, that you're that little bit closer, albeit with a lot of bodies between you and the goal. And yesterday, the shot in the end, apart from the fact that he cut back past two players diving in front of him, the shot finally goes through the legs, I think, of Joan Jordan. I can't remember who it is now. And so it's still difficult. But that's very much it. And there was a stat from everyone's favourite soccer statistician, Mr. Chip, last night, who was comparing him to Iniesta and said, look, one thing's for sure, he's got more goal than Iniesta. Iniesta, 8 in 139 games at the age of 21. Pedri has got to 8 in 71 games at the age of 18, or I think he's 19, actually, isn't he? I think Mr. Chip said he was 18.
He is 19, yeah. Anyway, he's staggeringly and horrifyingly young, and a very, very good footballer indeed. He scored a very good goal. It wasn't a standout game from Pedri. I mean, he did well, but it wasn't a game where we necessarily thought, oh, wow, apart from the goal. I was very taken by Ousmane Dembélé and his performance, and he was basically involved in everything that was good for Barcelona. We keep asking, is he going to stay or not? Last night, after the game, Matteo Lamine said he and his agent, that's Dembélé, know our position. He can stay with a sustainable, proportional salary. He got a standing ovation when he went off Ousmane Dembélé. They're going to try and keep him, aren't they?
They're going to try. And the question mark is if he accepts it. The question mark is whether he has better options, and whether what has happened over the last couple of months convinces him that even if there are better options financially, that this might be the best thing for him, that he's finally in an environment that seems to suit him, with a team that's built in a way that means it works more often for him, and he's staying fit. Now, obviously, staying fit is partly about chance, but there's also things to do with preparation, the kind of work you do, the way that you train, and so on. And I just wonder if emotionally and mentally he'll be looking at this and thinking, actually, let's not go now. Because it would be a real pity, wouldn't it? Because I said, whenever it was, when all this blew up in January, and said on the podcast that the truth is that Dembélé has not necessarily been a bad footballer at Barcelona, because actually at times he's been pretty good, but he's largely been irrelevant. What's really striking over the last couple of months is he absolutely isn't irrelevant. He's really important for the way that Barcelona play, even on those days when he doesn't play that well. And it's worth noting that he still makes a lot of bad decisions. You know, he still, in terms of that decision-making process, is not a particularly great footballer. Xavi has an analytical, I don't know what to call this, methodology, I suppose, an approach which looks at the things that players do in terms of decision-making, in terms of the way that they kind of connect with the other players. And his coaching staff, his analysts and himself, are very clear on this. You look at someone like Pedri, and 80-90% of what they do is the right decision. So you don't have to work very much with them in terms of the video analysis and the explanations, because it kind of comes quite naturally to them. With someone like Dembélé, you have to work more in terms of running through the options, teaching them, showing the video, that, you know, maybe it's 80% of the decisions are wrong. But the thing is, of course, or 90%, that 10 or 20% is absolutely golden to them. And that 10 or 20% wins you the game. And so if you can work on that and kind of tilt the balance of those statistics, as well as the fact that he is so quick, he is so smooth in that stop-start thing where he gets the ball and he drops the left shoulder and goes outside with the right, or drops the right shoulder and comes inside to the left. And he's so two-footed that he then doesn't need to lose fluidity with the next pass. And as I've talked about before on this podcast, sometimes, of course, decision-making is about the options that you've got. And actually, you can help a player's decision-making without him changing very much by changing which decisions it's got, which decisions he has got, what he can actually do. And if effectively you can force him to take certain decisions by what he's got in front of him. Now, again, we saw last night that some of the kind of promise of those moves didn't come off, but it's happening much, much more often. His contribution in terms of hard statistical data, basic goals and assists or chances made, is far, far greater than it's ever been before. And I think you're right. I think they are going to try and make him stay because I think they can see this. They can see that this is working. And the question mark is, what does he think? Now, Xavi believes and has said this publicly, but I don't think it's just about public consumption, that Dembélé at some level does want to stay. But that, of course, it's not just as simple as what Dembélé is saying to him. It's not just as simple as how Dembélé is responding daily. It's about what the other options are, about what the people around Dembélé are saying to him, and about what priorities he puts on what part of his career. And he's absolutely entitled, by the way, to put a priority on a contract that looks much bigger, on maybe a change of location. But right now, the football part of it is going well, that it would be such a pity if at the point at which it looks like Dembélé could be a genuinely good player, like a really genuinely good player and consistently, if that was broken.
Yeah, it would be a big shame. From a La Liga perspective, we hope he stays and continues.
Also, you know what? I genuinely...
For Barcelona...
I genuinely think this. It would, you'd say there would be a big pity for us, and it would be a big pity from a La Liga perspective and from a Barcelona perspective. I think there's a very strong possibility, and I think this has to weigh heavily in Dembélé's mind, that it would be a big pity from his perspective as well. Now, I don't want to sound flippant or dismissive, but you know what? I'm going to sound flippant or dismissive. If he was to go to PSG, I don't know about you, but I can only see that ending one way, and it's not good.
Yeah, it doesn't seem a very attractive place to go, PSG, at the moment, apart from being based in one of the most glorious cities in the world and probably being paid an extortionate amount of money. Apart from that, the actual project doesn't seem great.
Exactly. Admittedly, that could change with a different coach, with different players, with a clean out of the squad. All those things can change. But this is the big thing about what's happening at Barcelona, is that right now you're confronted by a reality that's actually attractive. And possibly for the first time in 4 or 5 years for him.
I'm aware that we haven't touched too much on Sevilla, but if we've got questions on Sevilla, please send them to us. We will talk about them in the Q&A pod. We've got to move on and talk about Real Madrid and their 2-1 win against Celta Vigo. We genuinely don't like to talk about referees and controversy and all sorts of stuff, but we'll sort of glance over it, and then if you want us to do more, we can do that on the Q&A pod. Real Madrid got 3 penalties in this game, which in itself isn't problematic. If there are 3 penalties in a game and the referee gives them, that's not a problem. I guess the problem is that it was a little bit questionable, certainly the 3rd penalty. But you know what? I mean, yeah, people get dodgy penalties all the time, really. I mean, I think the 3rd one is not a penalty at all. I think the other 2 are. I think that's genuinely the position that most people have. And yeah, I mean, you know, sometimes they go your way, sometimes they don't. I don't think there is a conspiracy for or against Real Madrid, unlike a lot of Real Madrid fans. But there we go. Sydney, do we need to talk about this more?
I just quite like what Aspas said. I mean, apart from the fact that Aspas was quite funny.
He might get fined for this.
He said it felt like the only thing that was missing was the referee giving a 4th penalty and taking it himself. What I quite liked about that comment from Aspas was he didn't actually say the referee. He said Pedro. What was missing was Pedro giving a 4th penalty and taking it himself. And I sort of quite like that sort of friendliness about the fact that he was having a little dig. And I want to put this into context. Aspas said something I think really important. This is Aspas, remember, who is the opposition player and in the heat of the battle and all of those kind of cliches, is kind of entitled to be angry, right? And he said the 2 are penalties. He said the 2, he said, look, they're penaltitos, little penalties. They're a bit light, but the 2 are penalties. I must say, in my opinion, by the way, I have a problem with the 1. Not because I think it's not a penalty, because I think the way it goes, it is a penalty. But I have a problem with a broader conceptual thing, which is that this idea that, well, you have to talk about who creates the contact. And we don't seem to do that often enough. And the 1, I feel really sorry for a player who is behind a player who then swings his leg. He's not provoking the contact. He's in their space, but anyway, I really don't want to have the argument because, yeah, fundamentally, the point I'm making with Aspas is basically saying, look, this isn't that bad, really. It's three penalties. Two of them are. They're a bit light, but they are. One of them probably isn't. And then there's a goal ruled out because Aspas is offside interfering with play. I don't think there can be any doubt that he is interfering with play because Alaba can get to the ball anyway. I think there's a broader question, which of course is what Thibaut Courtois said. And I really like it when you get players who speak honestly and directly. And both Aspas and Courtois did post-game. And Courtois said, I don't know if we deserve to win this. Because I had to make two great saves in the first half, which he did. The one he makes from the free kick is unbelievable. I mean, he's just a sensational goalkeeper. Madrid didn't play very well. They didn't have control of the game. Actually, it's a recurring theme in recent weeks. You could maybe even say beyond that as well. Although I think there's been periods of this season where they have taken control. And all in all, it wasn't a great performance. And I feel a bit for Celta because it was a pretty good performance, I thought, from them.
And Real Madrid are still 12 points clear at the top of the table. They are almost certainly going to win this league title. And yet it does feel like they are running out of gas a little bit.
It does. I mean, I suppose to contextualise this, and you know, this is, I suppose you could say in Real Madrid's defence, but to contextualise this, I think, first of all, I think them running out of gas is possibly natural because it's not been a team of rotation this season. There has been very much a set 11. We've talked about how with the absence, with the possible exception rather of the player on the right, but even in recent weeks, even that's looked clear. It's been Asensio now for the best part of 7 or 8 weeks, maybe even longer. So there hasn't been rotation, so perhaps it's natural. We talked earlier in the season about whether what Ancelotti was trying to do was you win the games you can now rather than planning for the whole season, and then maybe you can rotate a bit more, which is why it's perhaps surprising that they haven't rotated more during these last 3 or 4 weeks at the point at which it's felt like they could have done. When it's felt like the league is tied up. The other part of the context here, of course, is that they played Chelsea in midweek. And I think that even if there isn't a deliberate backing off in the week before the midweek games, I think there's a sort of subconscious element to that of players maybe not wanting to take that step again, of players maybe wanting to play within themselves. And I think that can give the impression maybe of tiredness, whereas rather than tiredness, it's reservation, if you see what I mean. I don't know about you, but I feel like certainly in the game in London, I wouldn't be surprised at all if Real Madrid played with an extra midfielder rather than three forwards. And if that extra midfielder was Valverde, precisely for the reason of giving them that little bit more energy, that little bit more legs, I suppose.
Looking forward to that.
Although not literally, because of course it will still be the same number of legs on the pitch.
Yeah, all right, Sydney. Yeah, that's right. Don't show off. You can still do math.
I want to make that very clear because, I'm not very well. Notice I didn't tell you how many legs. I was not going to risk that. Because 2 times 11 is very complex.
looking forward to Real Madrid against Chelsea in midweek. Also looking forward to Atletico Madrid heading to Manchester to take on Manchester City. They do so after recording 6 consecutive La Liga wins, the most recent of which came on Saturday night at the Wanda against Alaves. João Félix scoring early on again. He always seems to score early goals, this time in the 11th minute. An absolutely brilliant header. I didn't realise he had that in his locker, but as well as everything else, he also seems to be pretty decent in the air as well. Luis Suarez came off the bench and scored 2 goals as well. El Pistolero has still got it. It's interesting when we can talk about João Félix, but Luis Suarez, he seems to have accepted his role of being a super sub.
Yeah, he obviously doesn't like it, but I think he has accepted it because I think there's a sense of a kind of collective cause that really wasn't there before. And it's very interesting how openly players are talking about a switch point at Atletico post the Levante game, talking about kind of coming together and talking about having a target. Because, of course, implicitly what you're saying there is this wasn't the case before. And I think it is interesting. And I think it's interesting with someone like Suarez as well because it can't be easy to leave a player like that out. And actually, for a player like that, it can't be easy to accept being left out. And this is one of the things that I've kind of said quite a lot about Suarez over the years, is that for all the image that people have of him, he's actually an exceptional teammate from that point of view. You know, he's very good in the dressing room. He gets on very well with people. He's not a great trainer. He'll say that himself. But he's very, very serious about the game itself. And I think it's very interesting the role that he's going to play, which I think will be limited. I think there's a recognition from him even if it's difficult to accept that he doesn't have the mobility that other forwards do, and him coming on and scoring was significant. Admittedly, obviously, the nature of it is that one's a penalty and the other is the final goal of four, at which point Alaves have kind of more or less down tools. But it was a classically Suarez finish as well, wasn't it? The kind of clean through, outside the right foot, just an assuredness about him that it's very, very much like him. João Félix is very interesting as well, because João Félix is, as you say, he's contributing. He's scoring a lot of early goals. I've got the stats somewhere, but I think I've lost it. It's written on my notebook. So, well, there you go. 6 goals and 2 assists in the last 7 games. He has talked about how he always worked, but at the same time said, we're working now. And I think a lot of people are not quite pointing the finger at him, but saying that there's been a slight shift in his game. The freedom with which he's playing, he didn't come off at the weekend, which I thought was interesting. He stayed on even when forwards were put on the pitch, and he went to the left-hand side, which he doesn't like at all, but he played quite well from that position. In fact, he played very well from that position, and Atletico are gathering momentum. Simeone said something interesting, and I think he's right. They went 1-0 up early. They'd had a goal disallowed even before they scored, and then Alaves scored. And at that point, there was a little flicker of kind of feeling this is sort of what was happening before this recent run. You know, they get caught, they kind of drift from the game a little bit. And Simeone said that actually the goal was good for them, and partly because it happened early enough, they had time to score. He said, and we needed to be kind of woken up again, to be said, you know what, this game can be taken from you. And then they responded again, and they are looking quite good. I don't want to overplay it, though, because I still look at these last 6 games and say it's not like I'm watching a team that's absolutely brilliant now. But there is a team that sort of knows what it's doing.
Do you know the statistics are actually quite telling over this winning run from Atletico Madrid? If you look at their defensive line, they're defending 6 metres deeper than they were prior to losing.
That's a great stat.
Prior to losing to Levante. And they've, over the last 5 games, prior to the game against Alaves, they were averaging 38% possession in La Liga, the lowest in the division. So it's kind of gone back to basics, back to Cholismo.
Yeah, and you know, I know we've talked about this before, but we've talked about it before because it's happened before. This is a recurring trend, isn't it, over the last 4 or 5 years? This moment in the season, the difference, I suppose, this season is it happened so much later. That moment in the season, which normally is a kind of back end of autumn coming into the winter, where there's kind of a reversal to type, reverting to type for Atletico. This season it happened later. And I think it partly happened later because the squad is stronger, because they came from being league champions doing something slightly different, because I don't think they really had a reversion to type last year. I think last year they did more or less maintain that thing most of the season. They certainly played higher most of last season. It became a bit epic at the end, and it became very nervy, and they did almost blow it, but they got there, and I think it was a brilliant league title that they won. But yeah, that return to type is very significant. And of course, what it really focuses on is it's a return to type in time for the Champions League. And we saw lots of kind of very upset Manchester United fans about the way they played in Manchester. And me and you may now be over desensitized to Atletico's approach. We didn't think it was that bad, but certainly there was an element of that old sort of nasty bastard Atletico. And that's one of the reasons I think why there's a certain degree of optimism about City. They all know that City are a better team. There's no doubt about that. Everybody knows that City are brilliant. But there is that sort of slight sense, yeah, but if there's a team that can kind of get on their nerves and break them up and not allow them to do that and make life difficult and block and play deeper. And as you're talking about that 38% and those 6 metres, I think are really significant numbers. Then it's maybe Atletico. And of course, it's been borne out before by Atletico against Pep Guardiola games. Admittedly, and I want to make this point very clear because I think it's sometimes overlooked. When they got through against Bayern in Munich, in which year was it? Is that 2017, is it? Or 16? I'm not sure which year it is. 16. You know, yes, they got through, but genuinely, they were incredibly lucky. And, you know, they're kind of hiding under the table for the last half an hour and just hoping. And they got away with it. I mean, that, you know, that's meritorious as well, because you've got to resist. But it is almost a miracle, as it was actually in truth at Anfield just before the pandemic.
Before we go, a quick mention for Levante, who, as I said, are off the bottom of the table for the first time since match day 13, after beating Villarreal at home 2-0, and rightly so as well. Villarreal were bloody awful, playing their strongest possible team ahead of the game with Bayern Munich midweek in the Champions League. I'm really not sure what happened, but credit to Levante. We thought they were down and out dead and buried. They've given themselves a chance. They're 5 points from safety. And you know what? They might do it. They probably won't, but they might.
Yeah. That's the thing. That's one of the things that makes this relegation battle quite very interesting. I mean, it's always interesting, I think. But you look at it now and you think all of the teams in trouble, with the possible exception of Mallorca, but they've only just changed manager, and we know that Aguirre changes teams' mindsets and changes the way that teams approach things emotionally as much as anything else. But you look at the teams down there and you think all of them have got something. Well, maybe not Alaves, actually. Maybe not Alaves. You know, there's a little glimmer of hope for all of them, and the results are making it very interesting. By the way, what Sergio has done at Cadiz is fantastic, isn't it, so far?
Yes, really impressive from Sergio, who's turned things around for Cadiz, who also look dead and buried, but they're 5 points clear of the relegation zone. Before we go, a quick word on the Segunda. Sydney, I don't want to alarm you, but Oviedo are in the playoffs.
I don't know what to think. I don't dare to believe that this could actually happen, so I'm not going to.
Okay, it's not.
We were a bit fortunate this time, in fairness, as well. Three red cards for Cartagena. I think a couple of them are a little bit ropey.
Managed to scrape a 2-1 win against eight-man Cartagena. This week in the Champions League, you've got Man City against Atletico Madrid on Tuesday. Then on Wednesday, Chelsea, Real Madrid, Villarreal, Bayern, which you and I are both going to. Looking forward to that. And on Thursday, it's Eintracht Frankfurt against Barcelona. If there's anything we haven't talked about and you want us to talk about, send us a question for our Q&A pod tomorrow, which will be out for patrons, and we will answer it. Thanks for joining us this week, amigos. We'll be back next week as ever. Speak to you then. Adios.
Cheerio.